Good morning, everybody. Happy Saturday. You're listening to the Repcolite Home Improvement Show, sponsored by Benjamin Moore. You're starting your Saturday off like a champion. How are y'all doing? How was your week? That's the bigger question. Saturday, Sunday, these are going to be great days. How was your week? Was it great? Was it memorable? Did you do something, you know, that your family maybe, you know, maybe will be reminding you of for years to come? Did anything like that happen? Happen to you? Well, I did that. Absolutely, I did that. And even for me, this is embarrassing. But I'm going to tell you about it briefly before I get into the show, just because it's on my mind. And maybe this will exercise it, you know, cast it out of my mind so I don't have to think about it anymore. Anyway, the other night we had hot dogs and sweet corn for dinner. And we love sweet corn. I have always loved sweet corn since I was but a wee lad. But the problem with sweet corn, as you're all well aware, is that it's not easy to eat in a very dignified manner, right? It's like ribs or something in that regard. You've got that cob, it's covered in butter, you know, it's dripping everywhere. You're running it across your face like it's the carriage of a typewriter. It's just messy, right? It's a given. We're all equals when we're eating sweet corn. You know, there's no royalty when you're eating sweet corn, or at least no dignified royalty, because I can't imagine a polished way, a classy way to eat corn on the cob. It's not that kind of food. Anyway, I made it 10 times worse on accident. Now, basically, this is a non-story. There's really, I don't even know how to tell it. It's not really a chain of events. It's a non-story. I don't even know what happened. I don't know what caused all of this to happen. I was working my way across the cob, you know, eating away. And I was thinking, as I always do when I'm doing that, I'm thinking that I look like a little typewriter, right? Just clicking my way along. And then when I get to the end, I always think there should be a bell that goes ding. And then I can return to the other end of the cob and keep working, you know, my way back again, like a typewriter. I'm sure everybody thinks those exact same thoughts. I'm doing that, all right? That's happening at the table. I'm thinking those things, and I must, this is all I can think, I must have made some kind of ridiculous, deep in thought face, you know, as I'm working my way across the corn on the cob. Something like that. I was doing something odd because I happened to look up as I'm munching, and Hannah, who's sitting next to me on my left, is staring straight into my soul. And not just staring, she's got this ridiculous grin on her face. Her mouth is, you know, just wide open in this mid-laugh. I don't know what to call it, a silent laugh of hilarity. Her eyes are just streaming tears. She is absolutely just having a moment laughing at something I'm doing, and she's holding it all in. It's all silent. And I catch that, you know, that rapture of hilarity on her face, and I'm sorry, but I completely exploded. I laughed so hard, so instantly and boisterously, I couldn't help it. And of course, I had my mouth full of sweet corn, sweet, precious sweet corn, so delicious, full in my mouth, and I laugh. You can only imagine. In fact, you can't imagine the scene that played out. I'm sure you're going to try to imagine, then you're going to wish you hadn't. But it was just like some kind of scene from a war movie. I exploded and sweet corn went from the head of the table everywhere. I mean, I'm probably going to be finding sweet corn on the blinds for months to come. I'm going to be finding sweet corn kernels in all kinds of crazy places, and everybody's going to say, why is this here? And then they're going to remember this moment again, and we're going to relive it. I sprayed my entire family with food completely unintentionally. The worst part of it all was not just the look of, you know, people laughing about it, because that came later, sometimes for a couple kids, much later. The main thing was just this look of sheer disgust. Somehow they thought I did this on purpose, that just out of the blue, I decided I'm going to spray sweet corn across the table for no reason, just because the meal wasn't exciting enough, perhaps. Anyway, I think they're going to be eating in ponchos for years to come. They're for sure going to be laughing about this as time goes by. That was my week. That was just part of my week. That is how I roll. Normally I embarrass myself at least once or twice during a week. This one was big. This one was so gross and so big. So I decided to share it on the radio with even more people. That's how my brain works. I don't get it either. Anyway, let's move on to the show. Let's talk about important things. On the show this week, I'm going to be talking all about choosing exterior paint colors with confidence. That's going to be the whole show. And it's going to apply to not just paint, but siding colors, roofing colors. I'm going to give you some tips and tricks to just help you make that decision a little more confidently. You know, because have you ever been in that boat where you've got to choose exterior colors? You know, you're sitting there rifling through Fandex. You're trying to decide what colors would be perfect for your home. Have you ever been there? And like I said, it could be paint colors, but it could also be, you know, things like roof colors, siding colors, even just front door colors. It's a big decision. You know, you're trying to figure out the right color. Have you ever been there? Well, if you did go through that process of picking colors for the exterior of your home, the exterior of your home, or for an outbuilding on your property, you know the process can be a little dicey. You know, maybe for you it was smooth like butter. I don't know. Smooth like butter on the cob. I don't know. Or maybe it was bumpy, like my experience with corn on the cob. My children were very bumpy after being covered with sweet corn. That's just a ridiculous analogy. But was it smooth for you picking those colors, or was it a bumpy process? I don't know how it worked for you. It doesn't really matter. I did a little Googling about how other real people felt about the process of choosing colors for the exterior of their home. And here are some, just a few of my favorite quotes describing their experiences. Maybe yours have been similar. Number one, the first quote I loved, and it's this, quote, "I cried a lot, actually." I love that one. "I cried a lot. Actually." Another quote, "It was the most stressed I've ever been. They've clearly never eaten with me, but this was still a stressful experience for that person." A third person, after getting their house painted, they assessed the freshly painted house and said it looked, quote, "so childish. It was like a Smurf house, and I couldn't afford to have it repainted." All right. Can you feel the stress coming from those situations, those quotes? If you've got any imagination at all, you definitely can. It's a big deal. Having a house painted isn't cheap. The materials themselves, the paint itself, it's not expensive, but the labor is. And doing it yourself, you know, that's a huge money saver, but it's a lot of work. And if you haven't done it before, it's a really big project. If you've done it before, it's a big project. You maybe feel a little more comfortable about it, but it's still a big project. And to do all of that, you know, to pay all that money or do all of that work and then not love the results, well, that's scary. That's stressful. On top of that, you know, the exterior of your home, it's visible to everybody who drives by. You know, if you make a mistake with the color in your living room and your family sees it, you know, that's it. It's not fun, but, you know, that's the group of people who are seeing your mistake. And most likely, they've seen you make far, far worse mistakes than that, so it's not a big deal. But you make a mistake on the exterior of your home, the exterior color, and the world is going to know about it. And the world is going to talk about it, right? They're going to talk about it. You know they do, because you do, and I do. We all walk past or drive past homes that have, you know, terrible, ridiculous color schemes, and we can't help but talk about them. You know, what happened here? You know, we're very curious. We want to know how this happened. And you don't want to be the focus of conversations like that across your neighborhood. You don't want to be the butt of all those jokes. So let's fix that. And to do that, I'm going to spend the show adapting a color training that we've got for our employees at Repcolite. Haley, you remember her. She was on the show with me for a year and a half, 2 years, something like that. And she left the show about a year or so ago so she could focus on training all of our employees on products, tools, color, things like that. And recently, she just rolled out her newest training module, and it's a training designed to help us help you find the right exterior color when you come into Repcolite. Now, this training, it was so good. That's what I was going to say. So good that I decided I've got to adapt it here and present it to you with a few of my own thoughts kind of mixed in. And you'll know which ones those are because they're kind of the boneheaded ones or the off-topic ones. But anyway, this is largely Haley's info. I wanted to make sure I gave her the props and the credit for it because she did a great job with it. All right, first things first, this first segment, let's talk about some important ground rules for picking exterior colors. You know, when you're getting ready to select exterior colors for your home, for your shutters, your front door, your shed, whatever, first thing, the more light there is, the lighter a color is going to look. So outdoors with the sun as a light source. And as far as light sources go, that's a big one. You know, I can't think of a bigger light source than the sun. So with the sun as a light source, your colors are going to look 2 to 3 shades lighter on an exterior than that same color would look inside the home. That's really important to remember. I've seen people pick a light gray, for example, that's clearly gray on the color chip. You know, they look at it, it's clearly a mid-tone gray, they might even think. And I've seen these same people come back in later to say that it looks almost white outside. You want to avoid that mistake, and you do that by selecting colors that are a couple shades darker than you want it to look in the end. Now, I know that feels counterintuitive, but that's how it works, and you're going to be glad you adjusted your palette accordingly, so remember that. Second ground rule or rule of thumb is if you're painting more than just your front door or your shutters, remember that you're working on a huge canvas. You know, if you're doing the exterior of your home, it's a huge canvas, and that larger scale means that those colors, you know, the colors you pick, they can easily become overwhelming. Remember that person from earlier who described her house as a Smurf house? What's going on in that situation is exactly this. She picked a color that most likely looked good when it was presented in smaller doses. However, once it covered the entire exterior, it gained strength from that large-scale exposure, and it ended up looking ridiculous, like a Smurf house. And you don't want that. So you avoid that by looking for toned colors that have some gray in them. And this makes them easier on the eyes. It just makes them, you know, feel more sophisticated, easier to look at. It just doesn't overwhelm you. So to help with this, check out some color collections like Benjamin Moore's Affinity or Historic Collections. Both of those are great. Or even their Williamsburg color collection. Williamsburg is basically 144 muted tones or hues inspired by 18th century colonial homes. All of these Fandex that I listed, Affinity, the Historic Collections, the Williamsburg Color Collection, all of them are safe bets, and they're going to scale beautifully on big surfaces. So that's going to give you a safety net there. Check out those color collections. All right, third thing, last thing, sample your colors. We sell Benjamin Moore color samples that will put real paint in your hands so you can actually brush it onto the surface that you're going to be painting. It's worth going through this work. You're not going to regret it. So paint a large area, at least 2 foot by 2 foot, on the siding of the house or the brick or whatever you're painting, if possible. That's way better than just painting a smooth piece of foam board or poster board, because the texture, believe it or not, the texture on your siding can change how that color looks. So paint the actual siding and then observe it morning, noon, night, and make sure that it's the vibe you're going for. All right, that's just the beginning. Let's take a break, and when we come back, let's talk about the next big thing to think about, and that's the existing colors on your home, you know, things that aren't going to be changing. You've got to keep those in mind, and we'll talk about that in just a minute. Stick around. And we're back. You're listening to the Repco Light Home Improvement Show, sponsored by Benjamin Moore. And this week, we're talking about how to safely and confidently choose exterior paint colors. Or I guess it could be siding colors, door colors, shutter colors, whatever. All right, let's talk about the importance of taking into account the existing materials that you're working with. Basically, the constraints that are in place before you even start looking at colors. Now, I'm thinking your landscaping, your roof, gutters and downspouts, window casings and grills, and so on. Now, all of these materials, they're in place on your home, and they're heavily going to influence or constrain your exterior color choices. And that kind of sounds a bit like a bummer. It does, but there is a bit of good news here. And even if you don't have exterior painting projects coming up, tune back into me for a second. Come back to me, folks, just for a second, because this applies to interior painting as well. And it honestly applies to a huge part of life. I mean, I'm dishing out some philosophical life help or whatever. I'm not helping you with your English. I'm just helping you with your lives. So this is all good stuff. These items that I'm talking about, they're constraints. And we always have constraints when we do anything. You know, let's talk about projects in general, though. There's budget constraints. There's the layout of the home. There's the furniture that we can't afford to replace right now. You know, appliances that are this color or that color. There's a tub and a toilet. all of those things are in place, and we don't always replace all of those. So we've got to deal with them. They're constraints. Outside, there's the roof, the landscaping, so on. All of these things constrain our color choices. And when we hear that, we tend to feel bummed, like I said. We feel that our creativity is being leashed or muzzled. And in a way, it is. And we tend to tell ourselves that I could pick colors more easily and have a lot more fun if I didn't have these limits. And that's where things get a little cloudy. And that's where the good news comes in. Because it turns out that in reality, for the most part, when we've got unlimited options, you know, unlimited freedom, we tend to freeze up. It's kind of interesting. Boundaries and limits and constraints actually help us dial in our choices and start making productive decisions quicker. The things that feel like limits, you know, a budget, architecture, existing materials, they're actually giving us a place to push off from, a foundation for creativity. In psychology, it's backed up by research. Constraints spark innovation. Studies show that small obstacles can increase creative problem solving by nearly 40%. So rather than think of your home's roof color or your budget or your landscaping as strictly limitations, instead see them as pathways giving you a direction. Okay, with that said, let's look at some of these limitations or existing items that you absolutely have to take into account when choosing colors, and look for how you can lean into them on your home or use their nudgings to kind of get you moving in the right direction, right? The right color direction. Let's start with the landscaping. It's a big one, and it's easy to overlook if you're choosing colors in winter or early spring when nothing's blooming. But the landscape plays a major role in how your home looks. If you've got a lot of green stuff going on, if you've got a lot of green out there in your landscaping, hostas, ferns, evergreens, don't choose a green exterior. Too much of that, all of that green, and the house is going to just disappear into the yard. Same goes for white. If you've got lots of white blossoms in the spring, maybe skip white for the body color. Look at the dominant tones in your landscaping and choose colors that complement, not match or compete with them. All right, next, watch out for unpainted materials that you're leaving as is. Stonework, brick, block foundations. They can all be painted, but if you're not doing that, those tones should absolutely guide your color choices. And it seems obvious, but there's a house that I drive by often that missed this. Their stone has this bluish, you know, cool bluish tone. And the new siding, it's a color that clashes completely. It looks fine head on because you don't see the stone from the front of the house. But from an angle where the stone and the siding meet, it's jarring. You know, it's just really, really wrong. You can tell it's wrong. It's a mistake that was probably only obvious after the job was done. Don't get caught that way. Let those permanent features inform your palette. Same goes for gutters and downspouts. They can be changed or painted. They can be. But if you're not planning on that, don't forget to factor them in. Fascia and soffits fall into the same category too. Last of all, the roof, the biggest, probably least flexible element of all. Roofs don't get changed often, so the color really matters up there. Now, in general, the body of the house should be lighter than the roof to maintain balance. If you've got a gray or a black roof, stick to cool tones like blues and grays. If you've got a brown roof, then warm tones like beige, taupe, or red can be a safer bet. Now, I know I didn't give out a lot of specific color direction in that segment. That wasn't really my goal. I wasn't trying to lay out a lot of color recommendations for everybody's situation. I really just wanted to bring to mind all of the different things that you want to keep in mind as you start making your color choices. You know, certain aspects are easy to forget about, and that can end up biting you. Just keep these things in mind and think of these materials, these existing colors, as, you know, maybe as breadcrumbs that can lead you to certain color choices. Like, I guess Hansel and Gretel had the breadcrumbs, but I guess the birds ate the breadcrumbs. So maybe these are breadcrumbs that the birds won't eat. Think of them that way. Things that are leading you to certain color choices. They're hints that your home is giving you. Listen to those hints. It's going to help you cut through the clutter of the color rack, and you'll eliminate thousands and thousands of options, and you'll reduce the color rack to just a couple of color families. It can really help, so keep that in mind. All right, let's take a break, and when we come back, let's look at how a home's architecture does or doesn't need to inform your color selections. That's all coming up next. Stick around. You're listening to the Repco Lite Home Improvement Show Exterior Color Selection Training Extravaganza, sponsored by Benjamin Moore. Basically, I'm walking you through the best I can through a color training that we go through at Repco Lite so we can help you when you're searching for exterior colors for your home. Haley. I'm sure you remember Haley. She used to be on the show. Haley put this all together and brought it to our stores just recently. And I thought it was so good that I adapted it so I could work it, you know, put it here on the show and get it out to you guys. So that's what I'm working through. Now, what I want to get to is I want to talk about the architectural style of your home and how that should, or maybe doesn't need to, influence your color decisions. You know, depending on the style of your home, we may find ourselves feeling, I guess, locked in to certain color schemes. Sometimes we know what those color schemes include, and other times we just don't. You know, maybe we're new to that style home. We just bought it. It's our first home. Whatever. We haven't a clue. We know there's color schemes associated with it. We don't know what they are. So we end up either feeling profoundly limited by our options or profoundly confused and a little bit nervous. You know, we don't want to slap a color scheme on a house that's completely wrong for that architectural style. At least that's often, you know, the thinking out there. However, unless we're talking about a historic home in a historic district, you really don't need to feel completely locked in. The architectural style that you've got, it can guide, you know, your color choices, and it should probably help you. You know, it should guide your choices, but you don't need to feel like you're on a trail, but you don't need to feel like you're on a trail that you can't diverge from. You know, there's wiggle room. That's the first thing I want to stress in this segment is unless you're in a historic district, you've got a fair amount of wiggle room. Now, if you're struggling to read between the lines here, I'm encouraging you to lighten up a little bit. You know, you've got more freedom than you may have thought. Still, with that said, let's look at some of the classic color schemes for some classic styles of homes. And I want to start with the colonial. Now, colonial architecture, it includes Cape Cod, Georgian, Dutch colonial homes. Colonial architecture traditionally makes use of a color scheme of kind of, you know, muted classic neutrals. So think crisp whites, soft creams, beiges or grays, all of those colors for the main body of the home. You know, they're usually paired with primary colors like dark green, black, barn red, or maybe even yellow for your doors, shutters, and trim. So that's colonial architecture. If you've got a Victorian home, let me tell you, you've got options here. Options galore. It's like being at the buffet somewhere. Somewhere good. You know, not just the buffet somewhere, but somewhere good. A lot of options. In fact, there really aren't a lot of rules when it comes to these types of homes. You know, we sometimes think there are, we assume there are, but when you really get down to it, that's not the case. You can really stretch and still have everything turn out well with Victorian architecture. For example, you can do everything from rich jewel tones like emeralds or sapphires to soft pastels. A lot of freedom here. So if you find yourself choosing colors for a Victorian home, feel free to stretch a little bit, push the boundaries, and have a little bit of fun. Now, another common architectural style is a craftsman home. And the term craftsman represents a really broad architectural category. And while most people, you know, kind of picture a very specific look when they hear craftsman, it actually includes quite a range of subtypes and styles that all stem from that same design philosophy. You know, these homes are all about warmth, craftsmanship, and character. The craftsman movement, it includes, you know, a variety of designs from bungalows to boxy four squares to mission-influenced homes. All are rooted in kind of natural materials, strong lines, and like I said, that craftsman feel, that handcrafted, you know, feel, handcrafted details, however you want to say that. Traditionally, color-wise, these lean towards earthy, muted colors. So think browns, sages, and grays. The colors feel grounded. They feel historically accurate for those types of homes. But with these, don't be too afraid to modernize them a little bit by bringing in some mustard or olive accents. That would work really well with these. All right, moving on. Let's look at ranch homes. Now, colonial and craftsman homes, they trace their roots back to the 18th and early 20th centuries. The ranch house is pure mid-century Americana. You know, they've got single-story layouts, open floor plans, and kind of this feeling of horizontal sprawl. Now, when it comes to colors in ranches, you know, it varies a lot. It's hard to pin down. It's not uncommon, though, to see a lot of earthy tones. You know, so think beige, taupe, brown, tan for the body, you know, colors like that, with whiter brown for the trim. Really often we see burgundy, deep green for the doors and shutters, you know, color schemes like that. And that's probably the most common. But these homes really, you know, they could be quite interesting in the 50s and 60s. We've got some old Repco Light exterior color charts from that era. And the colors of that era were pretty crazy. So this isn't specific to ranches. But ranches in, you know, the 50s and 60s, they really excelled when it came to a little bit of extravagance. So you could see soft pastels on the bases, so pale aquas and buttery yellows and all of that on, you know, the base of the house, and then bright colors for the doors and the shutters, you know, white or black for the trim. And that was pretty common in the 50s and 60s or so. All right. Those are some, you know, main architectural styles and their traditional color palettes. But remember, unless you're in a historic district, you're really not bound to use those color schemes. You know, you've got a lot of freedom and you can really tap into the colors that you most love regardless of the style. By all means, let those traditional colors and the architectural style of your home at least guide you, or at least whisper to you a little bit. They can make suggestions. Just remember, you don't have to listen to those suggestions or take them up on it unless you're in the historic district. Then you better check the rules, because there's going to be rules. All right. Now, before we move on from all of this and get to the last segment, I want to focus on a building material on many different homes, no matter their style. And I probably should have put this in last segment's conversation. In hindsight, I see that it would have fit better there, but I didn't do that, and I'm not going back in time. Not this time. Not going to do it. So I'm going to lump it in right here. I'm going to talk about a building material that's on all kinds of different architectural styles, and it's sometimes hard to work with. What I'm talking about is brick. And unless you're actually painting the brick, you're going to have to treat that brick kind of as the star of the show here. I guess it depends on how much of it is on the home. But if the home is largely brick, of course, it's going to have to be the star of the show. It's the main color in your color scheme. And that's obvious, but it's more complicated than that, because the brick isn't really a single color at all. It's a texture, it's a pattern. And when it comes to color, it's a bunch of different colors that, when viewed as a whole, you know, make up an average color that our eye sees. So you've got to keep all of that in mind when you're working with brick. But a lot of times people don't do this, and instead they go the easiest route with brick and they make the accent colors white. We just often don't know what else to do. But painted surfaces on a brick home should all take a back seat. You know, that's a big rule of thumb with brick. Anything that you paint, shutters, doors, all of that, that should take the back seat. Let the brick be the main star of the show. Let it do its thing. And when you put white trim on a brick home, that white trim, those white accents do anything but take a back seat. They're just way too stark on a surface like that. They break up the house's natural flow, and they can make the house actually look broken. You know, there's just some tension that's created from all the light being reflected back from those surfaces, while the texture on the main body of the home, the brick, is absorbing so much light. There's just this tension that's created. To reduce or eliminate that, you want to choose colors so that your trim, your window casings, your doors, your foundations, all of those materials, all of those areas, I should say, recede. You know, colors like dark taupes, browns, blacks, or colors like dark blue, teal, or green even. All of them will complement the orangey red tones that we see in brick without being loud, without being in your face. And in the end, the home is going to look more settled, more cohesive. And it's just because it's been put together a little more intentionally at that point. Now, if you're absolutely committed to having lighter tones for the trim, match the mortar color. This is still going to give off a visual that's going to give a nod towards having white trim, but it's not going to be as stark as white trim. It's not going to break everything. It's going to work alongside the pattern, you know, and the color variations in the brick, because that mortar actually does make up that average that we see, that average color that our eye sees. The mortar's right in there, so it's going to kind of work with that, and it's not going to separate from it. All right, so if you want to have light color on your trim and you've got a brick home, match the mortar color. All right, that's a ton of info, big info dump that I just threw in your face. Hopefully it helps you out. And remember, if you just can't remember everything I said and you need to revisit it, you can always find it online at repcolite.com. Just click the On the Radio tab on the homepage, and you can find the latest episode that way, so you can catch this again. All right, let's take a break right now, and when we come back, we'll wrap all this up with some final thoughts. Stay right there. or actually go wherever, do whatever you want. Just come back in a few minutes. Talk to you in a minute. And we're back. You're listening to the Repco Light Home Improvement Show and our spotlight on how to feel comfortable and confident when picking exterior colors for your home. And we've covered a lot of ground at this point, but there are a few things left that I want to hit before I wrap it all up for the week. And the first one is this: how many colors should you use on an exterior color scheme? You know, is there a rule when it comes to picking these colors? Because we're talking about picking them, I better give you some kind of idea as to how many you should be choosing. Is it two colors that you need? Is it three? Maybe it's 12. I don't know. Maybe it's 17 and a half. Maybe it's a different number. What is the right number when it comes to exterior color schemes? How many colors? Well, of course, the reality is it depends. You know, it's going to depend on a combination of the home's details, you know, what you've got to work with, and the vibe you're going for. You know, what you want to achieve with the home. For example, if you want to emphasize a vibe of simplicity, you know, that's what you're after, just calm simplicity, and you've got a ranch, just stick with two colors. You know, you've got a body color and a single accent color. That's plenty. If you want to infuse a little energy into the design or highlight certain aspects of the home, add in a third color. You know, that still works with that ranch, and you can achieve, you know, that slightly more energetic exterior that you're looking for. Now, let's say you're working with a Victorian home and you've got just loads of gingerbread trim. You know, everywhere you look, there's something new happening. If you've got that and you want to simplify everything and streamline it all, if that's the vibe you're after, all you need to do is limit your color choices. Fewer accent colors will cause excess architectural elements to blend into other ones, and it's going to soften that overall look. Now, if you want to draw attention to all of those details, of course, then you just lean into color. Go for 3, 4, maybe more, maybe 5, 6 colors. It all depends on what you're working with. The big thing here is this: if you do stretch, you know, whether it's the ranch, whether it's the, you know, Victorian home or anything in between, if you do stretch and bring in more colors, you need to be consistent. You know, you're essentially creating a pattern with color here. If there's an architectural feature that you're painting a given color, be sure that there's enough of that feature to make that choice look right and look intentional. Too many colors without enough repetition can look chaotic, and it can look like a mistake. So make sure there's enough of that feature, you know, to make that color that you're bringing in look right. Also, if you're going to do that, be sure that you make all of those features that same color. You know, don't mess up your pattern, basically, is what I'm saying. And that sounds kind of silly, but it happens all the time. And if you look at homes around your neighborhood, you're going to find some that do that. I saw one the other day that all the casings of the windows were painted a given accent color, except a bay window where they painted all of them the actual base color of the home. It didn't look terrible, but it did break the pattern. And it would have been better had they stuck with the pattern all the way around. So be aware of that. Keep that in mind as you start bringing more colors in. Make sure you're consistent. One last thing, as you're working with or thinking about how many colors you want to bring in, here's a really practical thing to think about. The more accent colors you bring in, the more money it's going to cost to get the home painted. And in some cases, the harder it's going to be to find a painter willing to tackle all of that minutia, you know, all of that work. So keep that in mind. All right, moving on. Another thing to think about: shutters and doors. You know, we've talked about accent colors, and we've mentioned doors and shutters plenty of times, but let's talk about them specifically here for a little bit. If a home has shutters, there's a popular understanding that those shutters should be painted the same color as the door. Well, that's not a rule. You know, you can follow it, you know, that's fine, but a better guide is to, again, assess your goals, the vibe you're after. Do you want to simplify and streamline that exterior look of your home? If that's the case, you know, paint the shutters the same color as the door, or if you want to bring in kind of a third color, make them a little bit darker, a shade darker than the door. You know, keep everything in the same family, maybe just a little bit darker. That's going to help streamline the look. It's going to simplify the exterior a little bit. If you're hoping to infuse a little interest or some whimsy or energy or whatever you want to call it, you know, infuse that into the exterior, then of course, feel free to vary the colors of the shutters and doors, and sometimes even vary them dramatically. All right, so that's shutters and doors. Now, final thoughts. You know, I'm sorry, this whole last segment is kind of just a, It's a hodgepodge. It's like a buffet. Pick and choose what you like. I've got some final thoughts, and then we'll wrap it all up. First thing is this. Don't rush when it comes to choosing your color schemes. Take your time with the samples. Take your time finding inspiration. If you're feeling pressured, you know, sometimes by a painter, by a designer, by yourself, a lot of the times it's us, you know, our own selves who are our own worst enemies. You're pushing yourself to get the answer, to come up with a solution. Just try to give yourself a break. If it's somebody else pushing you, you know, I understand there are timelines, there are deadlines, and they're going to need certain colors by certain times. But if you're feeling rushed, just try to find a way to slow it down a little bit. Nobody makes good decisions when you're feeling rushed. So keep that in mind and be sure along these same lines, as you're looking at all these colors and thinking about which way you want to go, remember that you should be looking at your colors in different lighting conditions throughout different times of the day before you make that final choice. You know, don't land on a color, look at it in the afternoon on the side of the house and call it good. Make sure you give yourself that extra time to see it in the morning, to see it in the evening, and just make sure that when the lighting changes, that color is still exactly what you want. All right. Along these same lines, still talking about colors here, be sure that you check out Benjamin Moore's Color Portfolio app. I know everybody and their brother has an app, and it gets to be a little much after a while, but the Benjamin Moore Color Portfolio app is really worth downloading if you've got paint projects coming up. It's going to give you access to all of their fan decks, so you can view colors easily right on your phone, but you can also test out colors on various exteriors. On the app itself, they've got, you know, a few, you know, maybe four preloaded house exteriors that you can, you know, try the colors out on. You can also take pictures of your own home and upload that. But even if you use their stock photos, you definitely can get a good idea of how colors look together, which is cool. But it's also going to give you a good idea of how a given color looks much lighter outside. You know, we talked about that earlier, that colors outside can look 2 to 3 shades lighter. You're going to see a lot of that in this app. So it's definitely a great tool to have if you're getting ready to start an exterior painting project, or really, honestly, any painting project. Download it and check it out. It's free. It's the Benjamin Moore Color Portfolio app. You can find it where you find your apps. All right, next thing, be careful about getting opinions. You know, we all do it, and we often all need to go get outside thoughts. But if you do that, if you go that route when it comes to your exterior colors, I'd recommend that you get one or maybe at most two other people whose design opinions you really admire. Don't get many more people than that, because too many opinions usually makes making that decision a little bit harder. Moving on, remember, we're here to help at Repcolite as well. You know, we've got people at every single Repcolite location who are trained and ready to walk you through this process. So bring your photos, bring your samples, bring anything that you think will help, and we'll go over your specific situation with you and help you make the best color choices possible. Finally, last thing I've got, get the right paint. You know, whether you hire a contractor or whether you do the project yourself, you, as the homeowner, you've got the power to choose the paint that you want on your home. Benjamin Moore exterior paint products are going to excel when it comes to performance and durability. You know, Aura Exterior, Regal Select Exterior, they're top-of-the-line products. You're not going to find better out there. Benjamin Moore's Element Guard, it's also a great product, and its claim to fame is really interesting. If we get rain, even just an hour after the product was applied, it's still going to be fine. That's unheard of in the industry. It's a really great safety net if you're painting in the early spring or the late fall when weather is a little more unpredictable. Now, another thing to consider with Benjamin Moore products is that it's not just the quality of the paint that you're getting. You're also getting products that are tinted with Benjamin Moore's Gen X colorants. This is kind of geeky stuff. It's a little bit nerdy. It's a little bit boring. And I don't often talk about them on the show, but Gen X colorants, they're designed to enhance the durability and color retention of exterior paints, especially in harsh weather conditions. These colorants are going to help exterior paints resist fading, cracking, and peeling, and it ensures that the chosen color stays true for a much longer time. So Benjamin Moore paint products, they're tried and true. They're going to give you long-lasting color and protection and durability for your home. Ask for them. But don't forget about Repcolite products either. We make them in Holland. Most of you already know that. And we've been doing it for over 76 years now. So we've got it down. And we've got a great exterior option called Endura. And as a bonus, we tint it with another high-performance colorant system that's going to give performance similar to Benjamin Moore's Gen X colorants. So whatever you pick, Benjamin Moore or Repcolite, just make sure you get the best paint you can. All right, that's going to do it. That's all the time we've got. We're going to wrap it up. If you want to catch it again, you can find it online at repcolite.com. Whatever you do today, make sure paint's a part of it. And remember, the next project you tackle is way easier than you think. Stop out at your nearest Repcolite and let us help. Have a great weekend, everybody, and I'll see you next week. I'm Dan Hansen. Thanks for listening.